The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Knockback, the retro and nostalgia podcast, is brought to you by, well, you. If you want to learn how to support our show, go to patreon.com/laststandmedia. Greetings and salutations. Welcome back to Knockback. My name is Colin Moriarty. I'm joined as always by my brother, Dagan Moriarty. Dagan. Quack, 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 quack. How are you, my friend?
Quack, quack, quack. The Oreo line.
The Oreo line, yeah. Don't know if you're going to get away with that anymore. You think you're probably not going to get away with
that? Probably would no longer work, my friend. No. I was just laughing. I have a little leftover scotch, a little rocks glass of scotch left over from last night that I just noticed in my office. And I was like, do I do it?
No.
And then I was like, what kind of degenerate drinks scotch at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, and it's been sitting out, so it's like lost all of its.
Yeah, although it's a peaty scotch, Kyle. So it already kind of tastes like ass.
Yeah, I'm not a scotch person, generally speaking. I don't like scotch very much. I mean, it's to each his own. I think brown liquor is generally pretty awesome, but bourbon all the way.
Yeah, you're a bourbon guy. I like
or
both.
Rye. That would be
bourbon's a little easier. A little sweeter, you know. Yeah, a little smoother.
Well, the barrels that make scotch, I'm sure a lot of people already know this, but you use new American oak barrels to make bourbon. And then those bourbon barrels are sold to scotch companies who then make scotch in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they advertise the shit out of that. Mm-hmm. You know exactly what it's aged in, what kind of wood, got the cherry cask.
And you can buy barrels of like old barrels of, I think they call it Kentucky lemonade or something, where you buy old empty bottles of or barrels of bourbon, and then you just dump a bunch of water and lemons in it and just let it sit for several years.
Oh, I never heard of that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's supposed to be really good.
Super cool.
Maybe a little sugar. Who knows? My friend, welcome to the show. How's life? I was curious, when we're recording this, you had just gone to Too Many Games. Can I say something about Too Many Games' logo real quick? They just invited us, so I don't want to do, you know, just immediately get a shit on them. It's not very good.
You don't like the D-pad with the...
No, because the D-pad is the 2. It's not... It's like the size of a plus sign, so it doesn't really look like a T.
Yeah, right.
You know,
It's too symmetrical.
Yeah, and I'm not crazy about it. But other than that, they're very nice. They seem to be. I didn't deal with them at all. There, very nice. Did you have a good time at the show? What was that?
It was good, man. Yeah. I was saying to Dustin yesterday. So for those who don't know, Dustin and I did a sort of knockback cross sacred symbols panel about PlayStation, original PlayStation, and it went really. It was. We both had a great time. Everybody who showed up, all the fans, all the listeners were awesome to a person, as always, polite, smart, they asked great questions at the Q&A. It was great. Too many games is getting huge. Every year it gets a little more crowded. I was saying to Dust yesterday when we were having dinner before the panel, I said, I honestly thought for a couple of years there recently that retro gaming was sort of tapering off. It was kind of dying. Hmm. And it's the exact opposite. Now, a large part of it is anime, cosplay. There's Pokemon cards there. There's traditional tabletop gaming. It's not just retro gaming, but I would say it's 80% revolving around retro gaming still. It's still very much a thing. Too many games, and they do a great job. I think it's really big. I think they do have a big space. They have a free arcade. They had a double free arcade. Lots of panelists. David Hayter was out, other Metal Gear, solid voice people. Is it Charles Martinet or Charles Martinet?
I've heard Martinet, but I don't. Okay. Yeah, I don't know for sure, though. I was in an elevator with him at E3 once, and there was like some foreign news crew in the elevator with us, and they made him do the Mario,
And he was a good sport?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be really cool, though. One of the fans told me, this is not to shit on Mr. Martinet, but that he was charging an exorbitant amount, like $80 or something.
Yeah, you want to know, here's my thing about this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe this is ridiculous because maybe not so much. It's actually ridiculous for him, but people, and if you're not making money from the product that you're in anymore, then I kind of don't begrudge you making a little bit of money with the signings and the pictures and all of that. I've seen, for instance, the guys, the Willy Wonka kids go to various Comic Cons. Oh, okay. On principle, I'm just like, I'm not doing it. You know, like I'm just not, I love you, but I'm not going to do it because I've signed and taken thousands of pictures probably with fans at this point, but I still make money on what I do.
Right.
So there is that. It's kind of like additive. And so I'm kind of six of one, half dozen of the other about how I feel about the charging for the autographs, the charging for the pictures.
It's a lot, dude.
It's a little fucked up. I think.
It's a little much. Yeah, or keep it modded. Like, if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, but before the Star Wars prequels, I believe Carrie Fisher was signing autographs for $50. Now, that's Princess Leia. That's the stand that should set the bar for everything. You should not be asking for more than Carrie Fisher. She's Hollywood royalty, and she's pop culture royalty, right? There's no Star Wars without Carrie Fisher. There's none of this without her. So you're charging $80. I mean, you're the voice of Mario. It's important.
Yeah, no, it's cool. But I just, when we try to, at our live shows, we have VIP tickets. And part of it is getting a picture, which we professionally have taken and sent to you. And we sign whatever you bring if you want things. Plus, you get a poster signed. Right. Plus, you get a VIP session, as you know, with us where we talk and hang out and ask questions and have a discourse. And you get to the venue first. So you pick any seat you want.
Right.
So there's like a bunch of things. I would feel weird if it's like meet Colin Moriarty, $20. It's like, you got to give them more than that. You know, you got to. But whatever, to each his own. I'm sure they make hand over fist money. Although at the same time,
yeah,
nickel and diming like that, although it's not so much nickel and diming, it's like more than that. But it kind of shows you these people don't make as much money as you might think.
Yeah that could be true, too.
If you're Carrie Fisher charging $60 for a picture, I'd think that that's insanity. It's like, how are
that's
you?
A lot.
But I'm just saying, how do you not have. You just want $10,000 from the show or whatever. It just seems so trivial for someone like that, I guess is what I'm saying.
I understand.
It's a lot of money to
saying.
Me. It's a lot of money to you. But for someone like that, it's right. Like you're it's sitting like a there $60 the a person. So let's say you meet, I don't know, 500 people or something like that. Right. If you have the stamina for that, I mean, it's probably not even close to that. You're walking away with $10,000, $15,000. It just seems. It seems strange. You know,
yeah.
Teach their seems own, like a, you know, but
yeah, I understand exactly. What
I
you
think
mean.
You know what I mean.
That does get into murky waters. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's a lot to unpack there.
Like, how much is enough? That's what I've been saying. Seriously, that's what I've been saying. The PGA Live Golf Tour guys were saying that during that whole fiasco. And one of the guys I really respected when they were trying to court him to LIV Golf, and they tried to give him $100 million, where he's like, I'm already a millionaire. Like, I don't care. He's like, I've made $15 million or something. I'm fine.
Right.
And that would be my mentality too. You know, where I'd be like, whatever, dude, how much is enough? Like, seriously, absolutely, how much is enough? All right. Well, it's good. I'm glad you had a good, good situation.
Super
there.
Fun. Super glad. Fun.
What did you and Dustin do? Did you guys go get dinner or anything like that?
Yeah, we got dinner Friday night. We had the little meet and greet, and that was okay. Like 30 or 40 people showed up, and people came from all over the place. They came from Ohio. There was a cat from Massachusetts. Somebody came from Florida. Somebody came from Buffalo. There was a couple of people came from Western PA.
Cool. 40 people is a great turnout.
It was great. It was really nice. And we met, and then some of those people stayed on for the weekend. So some of those people showed up at the panel last night. But yeah, Dustin and I met up in the afternoon, had some dinner, hung out. Did one of our listeners, one of our devout listeners, especially for Sacred Symbols, Anthony, he had a panel too, because he has a podcast. I'm not sure how big he is, but he had a great turnout for his panel.
Cool.
And then, you know, we did that. And then we went late, so we didn't know how it was going to show out for us at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. But it was good. They gave us a big stage, so there was plenty of empty seats, but it was enough. 50, 60, 70 people showed up, which I thought was cool. I met with our friend Pat Contry.
Oh, nice.
Earlier I haven't in seen the him afternoon. In a while. It was so nice to see him and hang out for a while and just have a conversation. But he was saying he had a panel, I guess, either earlier that day or on Friday. And he said only like 60 people showed up. So by that, I was like, oh, we're going to have 20 people, you know, but it went well. It went really well.
That's more, that is more Pat's scene, you know, but
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I went to his house in San Diego. That was probably in 2018 or 2019.
Yeah, not too long ago, about 5 years ago, right?
Yeah, I don't keep up with the retro scene at all. I have no. There's so many fucking shows and so many people doing things, which is awesome. But I whenever I hear about Pat, for some reason, it's always about something people being upset with him about. And I'm like, what can you possibly be upset with Pat about? Yeah, about the N64 book and about like some other, which you wrote for. I think you've written for his books.
Yeah,
and
he's still working on it.
Yeah, and they're just like random things that I see, and I'm like, why? I cannot even imagine having a problem with Pat Contry of all people.
But it's so weird, right?
I mean, doesn't he have beef with the fucking Coleco dude?
Yes.
Yeah, that
Tommy
I know about.
Tallarico.
Yeah, yeah.
Which that's a feud.
That's hysterical.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling, because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
All right. Dig, let's get into the topic at hand here, my friend.
All right, I can't wait.
I wanted to throw this one out at you and see what you thought of it. It's the 1992 sports comedy for children, mostly, The Mighty Ducks. And I'm curious what you think of this movie, if you enjoyed it. It was fun for me to watch it. I have deep history and provenance with this film. This film both as I'm a hockey player, or I was a hockey player, and I was of the age that where this was right up my alley. This was also during, I think, a renaissance of a lot of pretty good children's sports movies, whether you're talking about Ladybugs, Little Giants. There's just a lot of random. I don't know what that was. Angels in the Outfield. There was just Rookie of the Year. I mean, there's a lot of them. You don't really see them at all anymore, unless I'm obviously not a child anymore. So maybe I'm just missing all of it. But
no, I
feel
right.
Like I was constantly seeing these movies in the theater, and I always liked them. It was always like some ragtag poor kid, or, you know, whatever, and winning the championship, obviously Major League and all that, although those aren't children's movies. So I'm curious what you thought of this. Have you ever seen it, or were you familiar with it? I'll throw it over to you. I have much to say, but I'm eager to hear what you think.
Yeah, I always knew this was a big one for you. And now, listen, an iconic franchise, an iconic Disney franchise. I had never seen this film, so I didn't know what to think going in. And I'll tell you right now, from the outset, spoilers, charming as hell. Loved it. I thought it was really enjoyable. I watched it twice. Now, I knew going in, built upon the foundation of the prototypical classic kids sports films, right? For me, I'm old, so I go back to the mid-70s, 76, I think, with Walter Matthau and the Bad News Bears, which is still one of my favorite sports movies of all time. Never mind just kids sports movies. I mean, I love that film.
That's like the prototype for these kinds of movies.
You know? Definitely. I mean, that's the bedrock this stuff is built upon. And you see a lot of that in this movie. But also, you know, listen, not Coppola, not Kubrick, but a little deeper and a little more complex and thoughtfully done than the typical kids movie, than the kids child movie, you know, where it's like it goes a little more into, it does a little more than it has to. I felt like at a certain point in the movie, it starts off darker than I thought a movie like this could start off. And then eventually it gets into this space where I'm like, wow, this movie is actually pretty deep for what they had to do. They didn't have to do this much. You know, they go a little further than they needed to. And I think the performances are good. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. And also nostalgic, because we talk about the early 90s a lot, Kyle, on the show. And I feel like it's another case of that, where it's just an extension of the 80s. It still feels very 80s. And I love that look, the feel, the tone. It really takes me back to being a kid. I was I was graduating high school eventually in June 92. So this takes me back to that formative age, my friend.
Yeah, I think about a lot of things with this film. First of all, I don't know if you remember, I had one of the movie posters in my room in Marie Court of this. I think I got it from Showtime Video or something. That's it came awesome. Out in the theater in October 92. I definitely saw it in the theater, but it was a big home video thing for me too. The sequel, which maybe we'll get to at some point, which is iconic. The sequel is probably the most famous of the Mighty Ducks properties. And that's when they go and play like in the, basically what they call the Junior Goodwill games, where they're like Team America, and it's fucking awesome. And so the Hawks are basically, the Hawks in that movie are called Iceland. They basically have the same jerseys and everything.
It's still Emilio Estevez in that one.
Yeah, it's Emilio Estevez, right? And he's still the coach. And then The third movie, they go to boarding school and they play the they're the JV team at this boarding school, and they basically have a rivalry with the varsity team, and that was the end of that. I think there's more, but I don't know anything after that. But this movie, you're right, it struck me. I haven't watched it in I don't know when the last time is I watched this movie. It's been years, but there's a lot about it that struck me, which is, the first thing is something you said, which is it's dark. I always knew that it was dark, and it's even darker than it seems sometimes, because it deals a lot with poverty and all the rest, but it moves so quickly that you don't really get time to marinate on the sadness or the fucked up nature of a lot of it. For instance, they're like picking through the garbage. They're wearing magazines as shin guards. And if the movie was an hour longer and you just marinated on those beats a little more, you'd realize how Bad News Bearish it definitely is. I mean, this movie is the closest parallel to that, unlike some of the other children's sports movies from the late 80s, early 90s and into the mid 90s that I mentioned, which are all kind of different. So I the darkness of it, not only Gordon losing his dad, Gordon missing that shot, being berated by his coach, but something that was lost on me again, just seeing it as an adult and thinking about it critically, as opposed to just watching it on TNT or whatever the fuck it was on in 2008 or whenever the last time I watched it was, you realize how imprinted Gordon was by his experience playing hockey and how it formed the person he was, this unlikable, win at all costs kind of thing. For some reason, as a kid, I just never picked up on that whole lesson. Knew he was a drunk. I knew he was all these different things. I knew he wanted to get with Charlie's mom. I knew all this various stuff, but I never thought about that particular aspect of it, that he was obsessed with winning because he was obsessed with winning as a kid, that he can't stand losing because the pain of losing that year he lost his dad, 1973 it is in the movie universe, was so painful that he quit hockey forever. So I really, really liked that. I remember the drunk driving, and that's so out of what do you think about that? Do you think they would be able to get away with that today? Having the coach get like basically boozing in the car? They show it. It's not even like it's insinuated or whatever. It's funny how much things have changed in that regard.
Yeah, it's kind of handled comedically, and it is brazen. And it does, again, it takes me back to Bad News Bears. And I know I'm old, but in that movie, the Walter Matthau character was an alcoholic, sort of loser, down on his luck, pool cleaning, minor league baseball dropout, like a failed pro baseball player. So that was the whole thing. And I think, again, building on that template, if I'm not mistaken, I think I read that they were like straight up going to make Emilio Estevez an alcoholic. But in fact, they just kind of dispelled it into that one moment of just drinking and throwing the beer cans out the window, which, by the way, I've seen that happen in real life. I've seen like truck drivers just like drinking and throwing cans out the window. And like a can would fly out like every 15 seconds, like guzzling. That's an amazing thing to behold.
Don't they do? I got to look into this a little bit more because I don't want to overstate it. But I think in some states like Montana and others, you can drive with an open container.
Oh,
like
you can
get to go drinks, I guess, and then bring them places, but can't. People will write in and tell me, but
there's a way to justify.
There's like
that
some weird
rule.
Libertarian shit going on in some of those states. Yeah, where you can like where there's basically pull up bars, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh shit, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I'm gonna look this up.
There was one. This is really. I won't veer off too much, but there was one time I remember driving home from, or I was driving from Connecticut to go see Helene and in the Philly burbs. And I was in the New York area, like crossing the Throgs Neck Bridge or something, coming up on the toll booth. And there was a guy in like a big pickup truck, and he was drinking cans of Bud and throwing them out the window. And he almost hit my car with a can. And I got pissed, and it got into this like road rage incident. And finally, he was like a big intimidating dude. And finally, we pulled up alongside each other as we're waiting to go through the toll. And he was like, "What the fuck's your problem?" I was like, "You almost hit my car with a beer can." And he was like, "Oh, sorry about that." Like, it was the craziest thing. Like, he was just like, "Oh, all right, sorry."
People are
about
fucking
that.
Shot, dude.
But who was expecting this movie to start out drunk driving, right? Little child endangerment, pulling up onto the ice with the car. A guy bragging about his sexual conquests. It's like the Gordon Bombay character is a pretty unsavory cat, you know, the way he's presented. And then, of course, he has to have his arc where he becomes the good guy. But I wasn't expecting it to start in that territory. You could tell that what I read was true, like it started even darker and they sort of edited it to make it a little more flowery, but I wasn't expecting it. Like, that's not the typical thing you see now. This is 92, baby. This is 92 rules.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Like it reads differently. I don't mind the way it reads. I think some of the writing is really quippy, actually, when he says like community service, this is horrible. A really good line. And how can you do this to me? I hate kids. They're barely human is another great line. And like you said, the limo on the ice, all of that. But yeah, the walking through the office in the beginning, kind of the walk and talk is he's talking about how he banged the court reporter and did all these very weird. And it's just a different era because I don't remember anyone having a problem with that. Although maybe people, my parents and adults were cringing around me. I have no idea. But I didn't think twice about it, really. There were a few things, for a few innuendos I didn't understand, like that there's a reference to blue balls later, which I did not understand.
In the science class.
Yeah, I did not understand that at all. And that's interesting, too. So, yeah, the writing's fascinating. I'm curious what you think about focusing on the game of hockey for a movie. There's not very many of these. Slapshot, obviously, is probably the most famous, and we'll get to that at some point. That movie's hysterical.
So good, that movie.
But I'm curious what you make of the subject of hockey, because usually baseball, football, these are like the greater focuses. It's kind of, and you can see during the shooting, it's one of my complaints about the movie is that it's hard to probably shoot this stuff and to get what you need or whatever. And the hockey is just so bad in the movie. I don't know why it had to be like I almost don't understand why it had to even be this way, the way that they shot it, where it's so slow and it's not like the way hockey's played even at that level at all. So that was disappointing. But I'm curious what you thought about the focus on the sport of hockey.
Yeah, I wanted your input on that. You know, for, it's like me with skateboarding. You're going to be deeply analytical of something that you know presented in this pop culture way, right? Where it's like accessible for everybody, but we know how wrong it is behind the scenes. So I definitely wanted your take on that. It takes me back, Kyle, because as you know, we grew up and I grew up in the 80s. It was, I know it's not Canada. I know it's not New England, but we really did grow up in hockey country. Like I grew up with my peers in school, friends and otherwise, that were like diehard, dyed-in-the-wool Rangers fans and Islander fans, and they were all about hockey. You know, and if you were in New England, you were about the Bruins, and if you were in Philly, you were about the Flyers. So it really, hockey was a really important sport growing up in the 80s. Like I wasn't into it necessarily. I went through a very brief flirtation with street hockey. I never even learned how to skate like Kyle. But hockey was a big thing, and I do remember in gym class in junior high school trying to, because I really only ever knew the basics, get the puck into the opposing goal. I get it. I understand the mechanics of how to play, but I never understood the rules insofar as who's where and where they're allowed to go in terms of boundaries. And I remember asking my gym teacher in sixth or seventh grade, like, please explain this to me, because we were just playing floor hockey, you know, street hockey indoors. I don't remember if it was with a soft puck or a ball. But I remember trying to understand it because I just wanted to be able to talk that talk with my friends that were into it. And he just did, he presented it in such a way that I walked away even more confused. And that might have been it for me with hockey. That might have been the thing. You know, you think about those those seemingly little moments, but they're really formative. Who knows if he really took the time to break down hockey and put his arm around my shoulder and was like, look, this is how it works. This is how it works, kid. Who knows? Maybe I would have went on to be Wayne Gretzky, right? But that's one thing that this movie evoked for me. It was like, I still don't understand outside of the extreme basics how this game really even works, like what a power play is and what, you know, the penalties for what. And it seems very violent. So what's going too far and what's acceptable? That was a big thing for me. And that's where I got to pick your brain, because Even in this movie, I was confused. Like, who's a defensive guy? Who's a forward? Like, what does that mean? Where can they go? Are they allowed to go everywhere? I don't know. I'm so confused by it.
Yeah.
Still to this day. Soccer,
yeah, it's not as complicated as you probably think. Any player can go anywhere on the ice. So that's number one. Any player.
Okay,
any of the five skaters can go anywhere they want.
Okay.
But there's position, so you want to kind of stay where you're supposed to be. But there's no law keeping, or, you know, rule keeping you in place.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah. So
okay,
any of the five players can be anywhere. You have three offensive players and two defensive players and a goalie any given time.
Okay.
So you have your center. Those are the guys that take the faceoffs, and they usually in the offensive zone play in front of the net. And then you have left wing and right wing, which are the guys on either side. So offensive players that play on the sides. Right. And then you have a left defense and a right defense that split the ice in half.
Yeah, that is really simple.
But none of it's all so quick that if someone, you know, someone will do what's called pinching, which means that a defenseman will just take the puck up and start playing as an offenseman, and an offensive player will know to drop back and play defense. There's no rule saying either of those things had to happen, but that's how a good team would play. So you kind of read it like that. It's similar to soccer in that way.
As long as you're coordinated and you know who's doing what.
Right, exactly. And that's why, and some of the things they go into, and I was telling Mike, some of it's funny, like soft hands and keeping your head up. Like these are really, and he says these things and they get into it. Those are really essential lessons of playing hockey, receiving the puck, you know, and instead of just keeping your stick on the ice, you have to kind of cup it. It's like catching a ball, you know, you're kind of like going with the motion of it as you bring it in towards you. And yeah, so that's that. And then power play, that's when it's 5-on-4 or 5-on-3. And that happens because of penalties, which are usually 2 minutes each, and tripping, cross-checking, slashing, boarding. Like those are the different kinds of penalties you would see. So a 5-on-4 would mean there were five offensive players on with four defensive players on for 2 minutes. And that's alive.
That's all that is.
Yeah. So and that's when teams tend to score. So a 5-on-4 is a great advantage. A 5-on-3, which happens so often, that's, you can get as many penalties as you want, but you can't play with fewer than three skaters. So you can have three or four guys in the box, but it'll just be three players on the ice for you.
Okay.
But that's a massive disadvantage. If you give an NHL team a minute or a minute and a half in 5-on-3, they're going to score for sure. you know,
almost certainly,
because they just collapse the team. You can watch it happen. You know, you want to stay spread out as a defense, passing the puck around the perimeter when you only have three people instead of five. So a person on each player, the triangle starts to shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink, and you could see it. And that's why the puck is constantly moved around. So you get everyone collapsing on the net, and then you start throwing the pucks at the net.
Yeah, see, that's interesting. So is it like soccer too, where a team will try to draw penalties to get themselves into that advantageous position?
Yeah, I mean, there is actually a diving penalty in hockey for accentuating a penalty that you shouldn't have. So it's worth saying that, but
okay.
But no, I don't think it's quite like soccer. In fact, I think hockey, I hate to say this, I was a hockey player, so I guess I have a bias, but I've always thought hockey players were like the biggest men of them all, like straight up. Most of them played straight up, get your fucking teeth knocked out, back the next period, get 15 stitches on your face, back the next period.
That's insane.
Listen, the NFL players are awesome and they can fucking knock my block off or whatever, but they're babies compared to hockey players. And everyone knows that. Yeah, like everyone knows that hockey players just roll. If you have to get stitches or get fucked up, you're getting back on the ice later. It's just kind of the mentality of it. So, yeah, but there's not much else to really understand apart from that. Offside means the puck has to enter the offensive zone before any player. So,
okay. Yeah, that's really basic.
And you can tell that the flying V is onside. I was saying to Mike, I'm like, I bet you they go offside on this and they just don't whistle it. But actually, they've gone out of their way to make the flying V so that it actually was onside. The puck enters before the first person. So when they're passing it between them, the lead player has the puck when they're entering the zone on the blue line. So that would be onside.
You're looking for stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. I just was curious, you know. And then the only other rule, major rule, is icing, which just means that you can't dump the puck behind your red line into the other team's zone behind their goal line. That means that there's a face-off in your zone, because that's just a cheap way to dump the puck, basically.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You can just constantly just do that over and over again. So
that's not too bad. See, for me, ignorance is bliss when I watch a hockey movie, because as long as it looks cool and is well choreographed and everything, I'm content. But
yeah, the choreographing is not very good in this movie. That it's not very good in any of them, really. I don't know that I've ever seen hockey. I'm curious to see the Disney Plus show at some point to see, because I bet you it's much better from that standpoint. But that's what bothered me the most. I mean, because it's cool. The actors can play. They can skate. You can tell.
Right.
They know how to play. And I think that they've talked about how they went to like camps and stuff like that or whatever. And they kind of got people that knew how to skate. And there's some surprising people in this movie, too, like Jussie Smollett or whatever is one of the little kids, which is hysterical. And Little Pete from Pete and Pete.
Yeah.
This as well.
And so he plays Little Tommy.
Yeah. Little Tommy.
And Tammy.
So I like that they got people that can play, obviously. So why not just up it a little bit and get the hockey? Like you would think you would just get, what I would think is you'd have people scrimmaging and just getting tons of action shots and then trying to splice that in. Like it's the Hawks and the Jets or the Hawks and the Ducks or whatever. So you're like, okay, let's just have them play a bunch. And then just get a bunch of footage and then we'll get the shots we need of the scoring and all of this. And we can kind of splice it together. That might not be possible, but you would think that the action would be a lot better if you did a show like that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I definitely hear that. Yeah. And it seems like, I mean, maybe it's tough because hockey is so frenetic, but you could probably get away with a lot more too, in terms of editing and just, you know, cutting and intercutting and transitions and stuff, you would think. Yeah, but I mean, that Game Changers series will be interesting to watch because it's more modern. Even the look of everything, right? The equipment and everything will be much more contemporary because they just, I think there's something weird going on with Emilio Estevez because they just pulled the series off of Disney Plus like a month ago.
Or are they doing like a write-off, one of those write-off things?
I don't know.
You know, they've been doing that. Like Universal does it too, where they did it with Willow. Disney Plus did it with Willow, where that show's gone. Like it's just been disappeared. And apparently that's to take a write off on the entire production.
Oh, is that the strategy?
So like in order to truly take a write off, like a write down on the production, you're like, you got to remove it. It's gone forever.
Interesting.
So instead of keeping it there and taking whatever, they're just like, oh, Willow costs $100 million. So we'll just write that off our taxes, but the show can never be seen again. And that's how it works.
Oh, so they're keeping the Disney vault alive without saying that the Disney vault is
alive.
But
I think there's going to be a problem with them ever releasing it again. That's the point. Like they've taken the write down on it. You know, like it's a loss. It's an incurred, realized loss for the company. So you can't make money on it now.
Now it's a legal thing.
So in order to do that, because Discovery has been really famously doing that with a bunch of random shit, too. Like they're removing. They did like some sort of Grease TV show
Okay.
Like about the girls in Greece or whatever. And they not Greek girls, but Greece, the movie. And that movie is apparently one of those that's being, or that show has been disappeared too. So that's why it's happening. So I guess maybe they're going to do that to the Mighty Ducks, which would not be surprising. It's always been like a B or C tier thing. Yeah. But I just don't think they treated it well. I actually think the Mighty Ducks has a lot to do with hockey's popularity in the 90s. And I'll get into that. A fucking sports team owned by Disney, or at least funded in part by Disney in the beginning, was made from the Mighty Ducks, which is pretty wild. So
it's a big thing. Sure.
It was a big thing. And hockey was huge in the 90s. I think a lot of people don't remember that. And in the 80s, like you said, it was really big, and depending in your location too, but they started to expand in the 90s. There was some expansion in the 80s. The Devils were an expansion team in the 80s, for instance. They technically moved from Colorado.
I didn't know that. The Devils didn't exist before the 80s?
No, I think 82 was their first year, and they were the Colorado Rockies before. There was a team in California that went defunct called the California Golden Seals. I don't know if you remember them, but
don't know.
That would have been like around you when you were really young. And the Atlanta Flames became the Calgary Flames. There was a team in Cleveland called the Cleveland Barons that went away. Kansas City had a team called the Kansas City Scouts.
Okay.
So there were like a bunch of defunct teams. And then the NHL kind of went into this, because the NHL was six teams forever. It was six teams, I want to say, until the 60s. So probably 60 years of just six teams.
Wow.
Can you name them? Do you know what they are?
No, I don't think I know any of them.
Bruins.
Okay.
Rangers. See if I can do it. Bruins, Rangers, Canadians, Blackhawks, Red Wings, Maple Leafs. Yeah, that would be the six. Okay. So those are the original six teams. Wow. And then they expanded in the 70s. And some of the expansion teams, like I said, went away, Cleveland. But some of those expansion teams are like the St. Louis Blues, the Philadelphia Flyers, the Pittsburgh Penguins, stuff like that. The Islanders in 72. And then the 80s kind of came and went. Some teams moved. Like I said, the Rockies moved to New Jersey and so on and so forth. The Golden Seals went away. But the San Jose Sharks came kind of from that franchise.
Okay.
And so on and so forth. But then in the 90s, that's when they expanded. So that's like Tampa Bay Lightning, San Jose Sharks, Ottawa Senators, and so on and so forth. And they expanded a bunch right on through like the Atlanta Thrashers, which became the Winnipeg Jets, Nashville Predators, Columbus Blue Jackets, Minnesota Wild, which replaced the North Stars, which moved to Dallas in the 90s. And we'll talk about the North Stars in a minute, because it's very weird that they're in this movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I loved the North Stars old logo. And this was during that transitional time when they got rid of that N logo. You know what I'm talking about? The N with the star at the top.
Yeah,
it was
sure.
Fucking iconic,
yeah, of course.
Awesome logo.
Yeah, it is iconic, that one.
And so, hockey kind of got ahead of its, it was going really like with a head full of steam. But then in 2004, you might recall there was a lockout and they didn't play at all the entire year. I don't know if you remember that. It was 2004, 2005, I think, was the season.
That season was gone.
That just never happened. And that killed hockey in the estimation of a lot of people. Just absolutely killed it.
Killed it financially.
Yeah, where it was kind of, it was always the fourth sport, but it was kind of vying with NBA at that time for a little more respect. Now, I think its best target would be the MLB to try to surpass at this point, because the NBA is fucking huge. The NFL is an established behemoth now. But it's so funny what you were saying about the Rangers and the Islanders. Like, I remember that too. I remember hockey always being big. It was always big. That's how I got into it.
Definitely.
And our family, if anything, was kind of the exception to the rule and not really having any hockey fans until me in it.
Yeah, really?
Because the Islanders were huge. The Islanders had won. When you were a kid, the Islanders won four cups in a row. I mean, that's incredible.
That's huge.
It's insane. It's insane. I mean, I wish I saw that. I mean, it would have been amazing to have lived in that era. You didn't even enjoy it. You were alive and you don't even fucking know.
And Long Island's one and only pro sports team.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been very exciting. For 72, so preceded me by a year, right? And what happened with the Whalers? Did they become another franchise, or they just went belly up?
They became the Hurricanes.
The Carolina Hurricanes. Okay.
And they're in this movie too, which is very funny, because it's North Stars Whalers. And I remarked to Micah when we were watching it, I'm like, that is just a bizarre matchup that wouldn't happen anymore. That would be the Dallas Stars versus the Carolina Hurricanes now. So, but seeing Mike Madonna and Basil McRae, it's very, very weird, especially Mike Madonna, because he's so young. I know you don't know who that is, but he's arguably the most famous Minnesota/Dallas player ever.
Okay.
And he's like 20 years old in that shot of him. He barely says anything. He's just all squirrely in the background.
Two dudes coming off the ice talking to Emilio Estevez. Okay. I knew there was somebody, but I didn't know who they were.
Yeah, that's who they were.
Okay.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I wanted to ask you about something in the beginning of the movie, actually, and we learn about it throughout the film, but what do you think about the 1973 Pee Wee Championship? He triple deeks, hits the post, and they lose, and they have the iconic all the championship load banners, and then just that one banner, which is so funny, where it says second place. Who the fuck would do that? Very weird. No one does that. But a lot of pressure and a lot of abuse that you find out this kid kind of withstands, but you don't really see it. You know what I walked away from this, and this will be, I'll be interested to see what you think about with this, with Riley, Coach Riley, who's an awesome character, is I don't know that he's an asshole and he's not great, but I don't know if he's as bad as he came off when I was younger, because you don't really know. He says at one point, I taught you how to skate. I taught you how to win.
Right.
You know, clearly, like, he was formative in this kid's life, knew his dad, played with him for 6 years as his pupil. And we don't really get a good look at to why their relationship fell apart, except for the fact that it was Gordon who didn't want to play anymore. There's no indication that Riley kicked him off the team or said you couldn't be on the team anymore. Now, you see that at the end of the championship game against the Ducks when he's like, none of you will make the team next year if we lose this. So obviously he's, but they're almost like playing up the villainous arc in some way as the movie goes on, because in the beginning you're like, I don't really know. This guy's obviously morally gray and a little crazy, but I had hockey coaches that were not very many shades away from this guy, and I liked those coaches. We won. We were fucking good, you know, really good. And if I played for a team like the Hawks, I'd be like, you know, this is what it requires, is some fucking nut crazy ass NHL style coaching of these 10-year-olds. And that's what they were getting. But I'm feeling a little bit of revisionism about Coach Riley. And I'm wondering what you thought of this character and what you thought about the whole formative experience in that 1973 championship hitting the post.
Hitting the post. It's so much pressure for a kid. Mm-hmm. I feel like they would put that banner up in the 70s. The first thing I'm thinking is 73. That's the year I'm born. So you're coming into a very different culture, even than the 90s, because I think it was pretty harsh. I mean, you could speak to this, Kyle, about that pressure cooker situation. And that's an interesting thing about you, too, is you saying that coaching style, that losing is unacceptable, win by any means, it's about winning, let's really try to get a W, that coaching style could work for you because I can understand the motivation for a kid, but putting it on a kid, especially in a penalty shot, like do or die situation like that, is pretty insane. First of all, I think the kid who plays young baby Gordon Bombay is hilarious. I don't know what it is about that kid.
The kid's face. He's making weird faces. Why is he always making a weird face?
And that's fantastic.
And you think like that's the best shot you got? Like, there's the shot he's skating backwards, the very last time you see him when he's on the ice with his dad, and he's like, one more shot, dad, or five more minutes.
Yeah, right.
And then he's skating backwards. It's like, what are you doing with your face? I'm glad that you called that out, because that was in my notes.
He looks hapless. Like, he was just put there. Like, somebody, like, plopped him down, and he looks completely out of sorts. And he's kind of got the Garfield eyes. He's, like, half-lidded. He's hilarious. I mean, he's such a character just to look at. But, you know, I can understand the situation. And first of all, I like what you're saying about Coach Riley, because if you just take the player, if you just take Lane Smith as an actor, he played a villain in so many 80s and 90s TV movies and made for TV movies that dude is just a household name in terms of look at that villain. But right, like, you think of like Dallas, Knots Landing, whatever he played villains on, like, he's the consummate character actor villain, which I think is hilarious. But the thing about Coach Riley is you don't know what his, you don't know any of his backstory. Like, why is he so driven to win? So he becomes like the one dimensional bad guy wears black villain where you don't know why he's motivated that way. You just know that he's pushing these kids too hard, which for me as an adult now, looking back at a practically an 80s movie, it comes off as comedy kind of because it's corny, right? It's just it's a very very unidimensional tale of good versus evil, right? And I think that's hilarious.
Now let me ask you this.
Yeah.
First of all, Lane Smith died in 2005, which is very sad.
Oh man. Six, that's a long
but
time.
He died at 69 years old.
Oh,
which
shit.
Means Riley was 56 in this?
Yeah. Yes.
Living a little rough back then.
They didn't age well.
No.
When did actors start, or just people in the public purview, when did they start aging better? Somewhere in the 2000s.
I feel like people just generally started aging better. It's like, I feel bad talking about it because it sounds so misogynistic, but it's just especially noticeable.
No,
with women.
It's a thing.
It's just women. It's why all these 80s movies we watch where it's like, oh, this chick's like, oh, I'm the hot 21-year-old. I'm like, you look like you're 38. It's not an insult. I'm just telling you that that's what you look like. You don't look like you're 21. I don't know what the fuck is going on with these movies.
It's weird.
You know, very weird. So he looks like much older than that. But Lane Smith, you are missed, my friend. Yeah, it's funny, Dig, because and I wanted to get your take on this just from your youth sports experiences, because yours was more with baseball and football. But for me, hockey was the only youth sport I really played continuously. I played Little League a little bit, and I really only have very scant memories. There's this one specific summer league I played with my friend Tim, who and his dad was the coach. And I remember that being a lot of fun, but I wasn't very good at baseball. I actually remember they used to make fun of me. Fred Kotcher, RIP, of course. I remember making fun of me because I would never swing because I was so short and no one can get the strike zone. So I would just constantly walk and I'd be like, I'd rather just get a fucking walk, dude. And then I'd steal and do, you know, whatever I could, maybe get a run, but never get a RBI or anything like that. But because I wasn't swinging the bat, and he was like, swing. And I'm like, no. And then they would stick me in right field. And I used to get so mortified when the ball would come at me, when a lefty would come up like me, because I'm a lefty, as you know. So lefties would pull right, think Giambi or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
And so I'd always be like, oh, fuck. Because you can kind of like be out to lunch. That's why you stick the worst player in right field, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Stick him out there with the dandelions. But I was out there, man.
Oh, yeah. That's where you go. But hockey, I played at a pretty high level, actually. And not immediately, because I started kind of late. I started playing hockey in third grade. Like in a league, I started really messing around skating and stuff when I was in first and second grade, but that's late. And you really learn that when you play in more competitive places where, you know, if you go to Canada or in New England, where it's very, very serious. And, but I caught up and I played. It's funny because watching this, they're peewees. I played 2 years of peewee hockey in travel leagues, just like the one that they're showing here. And, I was laughing at so many different things in it because it was really fun and it was really formative and we were really good. Actually, one of those years was the year I had a very serious coach and we won the state championship that year. And, but I was laughing at all the little different like je ne sais quoi in this movie that I was making Michael laugh. I was like, they have an announcer. There's like fans in the crowd. I'm like, just take it from me. I played pretty high level travel hockey. No one gives a flying fuck what you're doing until you are in until you're in high school or bantams or something, juniors, obviously. I'm like, you're 10 years old. No one gets, they're showing like these fake newspaper clippings. And I'm like, there's something, nothing like this ever happened. No one gave a shit.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's you get a little write up or something in like a newspaper in Portsmouth or something, but no one, the one thing I do regret is because I think this has changed is that they have been keeping like historical statistics in these leagues because of the internet and whatever that all exists on it. I think on hockeydb.com and other places. And I'm like, damn, dude, I just missed that. Cause I used to keep my own stats. And I used to try to keep the stat. I used to love that stuff, obviously. And I used to try to keep the stats for my own. And I used to do box scoring sometimes for other games when I was a kid, where you like control the clock and the scoreboard and all that for other games. And I'd keep track of shots on net and all that kind of stuff. I love that kind
of stuff. That's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. And I actually got yelled at a few times because I forgot the I don't know if this is like this in every arena, but in our arena in Dover, New Hampshire, where I played most of my quote unquote career, the clock simply started with a light switch. And then when you wanted to stop the clock, you would just, the light switch would go down and you'd have to be on, you know, you'd put it down, wait for them to drop the puck. And there are a few times, especially in more serious games, we're like, what are you doing? They were yelling at you, or with power play stuff. Cause then there are different switches. And I'm like, I'm literally like 12 years old, definitely not supposed to be doing this. Like, cause mom's pulling strings behind the scenes. Cause we have friends there.
Awesome.
I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like trying to keep up with the box score and the refs coming up to talk to me to tell me about penalties and all the who scored, because they'll come up to you and be like 30 from 19 and 20. And that means that 30, you know, 30 scored assisted by 19 and 20. And so you write that down so they get credit for their stats. And then it's like number 4, 2 minutes for boarding. And they'll just like skate by. And then you're like, all right, number 2 boarding. And then you have to put the thing on the clock. And then you have to do your hands on both switches so they both run at the same time. Yeah.
I'm really sure
it's not like that anymore, because it's probably not analog like that anymore, but that's the way it was. It's very funny, man. We talked about the limo on the ice scene. I love this scene. This is an iconic scene from Mighty Ducks. I love it for multiple reasons. I love Bombay's confidence, especially when Charlie's mom comes around and be like, I grew up on the ice. Hell yeah, you did, Gordon. And by the way, I don't know why the fuck I missed out that his name is Gordon, probably after Gordie Howe. And I don't know why I didn't realize that until he calls him, hey, Gordy, like his dad. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. I've seen this movie 5,000 times. But I was curious what you thought about the limo shot. I love thinking about the kids getting into the limo with their skates. I can only imagine the thousands of dollars in upholstery damage they did to that limousine. What did you think about that scene, that iconic scene? And of course, the limo driver, who doesn't get enough credit as being a pretty great character. I don't
love
think
that
I, what is his name? I don't even think I have it written down.
Yeah, I wonder if I have him.
Let me see.
I don't know what he's named in the movies. Is it driver? Kind of comes the assistant coach or the mascot, right?
Yeah, yeah, he is like the assistant coach because he's like there during the celebrations, but they never really acknowledge him at all.
No. He's just on the chair on the ice and the kids are pushing him. He doesn't have any lines, really. Not much.
Yeah, I wonder what that was all about, too. Because, yeah, he gets a little bit of airtime in the beginning when he talks about how he was the bus driver for Grand Funk Railroad, which is hysterical.
Yeah, I love Grand Funk. Has that roadie. He's like a driver bodyguard. You could see him as a roadie type guy.
And then he has a great line, though, where he says, "But I have no regrets except for the 80s. Which is a really great line. And you're right that this movie feels like an extension of the 80s right on down to that limo. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it aged well. Yeah, the limo scene is great. First of all, the design of that limo, very 80s, pulling on the ice. I love the Twin Cities setting too. Like setting this in Minneapolis was kind of cool. It's refreshing because you would think Northeast, maybe Canada. But I like the Twin Cities bit. And then that plays into the Mall of America later on. And you got the whole thing going on. Or you know what? I immediately thought, all right, early 90s, late 80s, John Hughesy, it's going to be some sort of Chicago, Illinois, suburban Chicago thing. And putting in that setting was kind of cool. I kind of dug that. But this movie's filled with a lot of iconic things like that. Where, like just driving on the ice. Things that kids would be fun, you know, think would be fun, like these poor kids crowding into a limo, who cares, bill it to the law firm type thing. And that whole thing too of rich and poor, and later on this will sort of play into things too with the Banks character. It's more, like you said earlier, it's more implied than pounded over our heads. Like, we understand these kids are a little destitute. The Hawks come from a different neighborhood where their zone, right, is a little bit, they're probably a little wealthier over there. And we get it, but you don't have to hit us over the head with it. It's not really talked about. It's implied. And I thought that was kind of neat. Like, and they weren't spoon feeding everything for a kid's movie. It's a little more sophisticated than that.
Bro, how funny was it? I actually was fucking hysterical when I realized this at the end of the movie, when Adam Banks's dad is sitting with the Hawks fans at the championship game. And he has a Hawks jacket on. So he is a Hawks fan before, he doesn't give a fuck about what his son does. He is there to root for that Hawks team through and through, sitting with them. No one thinks that's weird.
I feel bad for him, though. Think about it, right? He's in his neighborhood. He's got his fellow accountants, mm-hmm. right? He knows he's got all the other friends' dads. Those are his pals. What is he just going to walk away from the group? He didn't really do any. His only sin is really just being a snob.
No, totally. Yeah, he didn't do anything. But I loved that where I was like, he made his choice. Sorry, Adam. All right. Let me think here about what I want to talk. Yeah, this is a good next topic here as I look through my notes is what do you think about winning at all costs?
Mm.
This is where I wanted to get back to your youth experiences with sports. And if you were ever on like really good teams, because I've been on really, really championship level teams and I've been on horrible last place teams. I've been on both of them and I've been on some teams in the middle, but actually I was mostly on great teams. And then in high school, I was on horrible teams and that was the end of the line for me. So I never really got that middle, like we're 12 and 12 or something. I was always like, we're 24-2-1 or we are 1-28-1.
You know? That's interesting.
And one of my teams in high school was 1-28-1. And I was the goalie of that team.
That's,
you can imagine
so
how that was. That was awesome. Especially getting it all blamed on you all the time, right? Like you're supposed to stop every fucking shot. Basically playing with people with one leg. I mean, that was like what it was like playing with in some of those. Actually, it was good. Wow. Because I saw our friend of the family, Pete, who was my hockey coach, his dad was my hockey coach in high school and he died and Pete took over the team. And I saw him at Allie's wedding when our sister got married and we were in a corner talking, shooting the shit for like an hour. It was really weird seeing him, but that was those teams were horrible. And I had said before that those teams were so bad that teams I played for when I was in sixth grade or seventh grade would have obliterated my high school team straight up. Just if you took them at the time and put them again, we would have killed them. Yeah. And so I've seen it all. And the reality is, and this is why maybe I'm a little sympathetic with the winning at all costs thing, is that it is a lot more fun when you win.
Oh,
I'll tell you that right now. And because it's not because you're winning per se. It's because you're playing the game right and you're seeing results. You go to practice two or three times a week like I used to in New Hampshire. Play games twice a week. So you're on the ice five times a week, sometimes six. If you have another practice or whatever, early morning, late night practice, if you want to get things together and you execute on these things and they work. You go into these games where you probably shouldn't win and you win or you hold your own. I have just, and these are, again, they're meaningless memories because they're just youth hockey memories. But of going into these games against, I remember this 1-1 game I played in when I was a goalie, which is a very low scoring, tight game. And just being like, that was awesome. Like we, and it was against this really great team in Concord, the capital of New Hampshire. And I carry those memories with me because it was fun to win. I remember the people and the coaches and the work it took to win and the study even it took to win. And then when I got to high school and it was taken much less seriously and we practiced once a week and we played once or twice a week and we barely liked each other and we didn't have any camaraderie and we had people that were really good and people that were really bad on the same team. And it's like, well, you can't win and it sucks. And then everyone starts to hate each other more and then you melt down and you don't want to fucking play. And that's kind of the experience that I went through. So I'm sympathetic to you don't want to win at all costs, but I can relate. I had a coach that used to pull me if we were tied, which is a very unusual thing to do. And actually you see that in the movie when they need to win to get into the playoffs. But my coach, his name was Mickey. If we were tied like 2-2, we would get a point in the standings. He was like, I don't want a fucking point, you know, and he'd pull me and get another skater out there. But we could just lose. And we did sometimes, you know, so I get it. You know, you want to win and it does make the sport fun. It absolutely does. The team in first place has a lot more fun than the team in last place. I guarantee you. And it's not just from winning. It's from playing the game at the highest level. So I'm just curious if you had any experience with that and, you know, what it was to win and if winning meant anything to you or means anything to you.
Yeah, it's a great question, man. I mean, I think back to my childhood with sports and I did basically out the main four sports growing up, right? Football, baseball, hockey, got my tooth knocked out with a hockey stick, street hockey, the whole thing. And I shot hoops. So those are the four things. And I loved each one of those things and was invested on various levels, but was never very good at them. But I was motivated to get better. It's just that I really ultimately had no talent. The only thing I did competitively starting back in T-ball 4 or 5 years old was baseball. And I was always the kid. I had a really bad arm And I still think the key with baseball as a kid is is just courage. If you're not afraid of the ball, if you could train yourself to not be afraid of the ball, especially standing in the batter's box with the bat in your hand, that's the key. If you could get over that hurdle, you could probably get good at baseball if you have a modicum of athletic ability. But I really didn't. I was terrified of the baseball. And I was the kid stuck out with the clover in right field, right? And was never really given the chance. Although I was really good defensively with a glove, even though my arm was poor and I was fast. And it wasn't until I had a coach a little later on, like pre-junior high school, this coach named Joe, who moved me into the infield and put me in the middle infield, usually at second base, which I would argue is the least skillful infielder and the least pressure position of the entire infield. But it was an entry for me to get out of the outfield and see a little more action. And you know what? Just feel a little more important, right? I didn't have the arm to be in the outfield. So it was actually a good move for me. And then they could bat me in a spot where I would probably struggle to get on base, maybe with a walk or a base hit, right? Maybe I'd pop it. I'd bloop it into the shallow outfield, and then I could steal a base. And he was the one to really, Joe was the first one to offer me some encouragement of like, maybe I could play this game. But by the time I got to high school, not only did I find skateboarding, but I kind of realized there's really no way that I could probably even play on a high school level. Even if I got onto the high school team early on in high school, I'd probably warm the bench. So that was, and I found skateboarding. And for me, I think that more formless sort of do it your own way style of, you know, that no rules type of thing with skateboarding, where you just kind of learn it at your own pace and do your own thing. It's a little more punk rock in that regard. That really is what registered with me, but also that I was just good at it. I found like a lot of people were afraid to stand on a skateboard, and I hopped on this thing. I was like, I don't understand the big deal. So that was the first thing that was like, really, oh, I could be pretty good at this. So, and when it comes to winning, it's tricky, man, because I was, even in Little League, I guess I was always on mediocre teams. It was the opposite of you. I was never on like the winning championship team. I think there was probably a few times where we were bottom feeders, you know, bottom of the barrel, maybe close to last place, but usually seemed like I was on pretty mediocre ball teams. Always seemed like a couple of superstars on the team. And then people like me that weren't that great was maybe made up the majority, like 75 to 80% of the team, the squad, you know. But winning is tricky because I think the frustrating thing about losing is if you really care about something and you're invested and you're putting in the effort, I think losing is extremely aggravated and frustrating if you're kind of operating on both of those fronts. Whether you're losing because of others on the team or because of your own inadequacies, losing is just frustrating if you care and you're really invested and you're really trying your best. Then losing is going to be a real drag. But I think in the rare occasion, you know, those rare times when the team is really operating on all cylinders, everybody's giving their best, everybody's getting along, communicating, really giving it that all invested team effort, and you're still losing, it's probably okay because you know you're doing your best. And the other part of that is fun. Can it still be fun if you're losing? I think about skateboarding. Like, skateboarding wouldn't have been fun for me if I couldn't eventually do the things with work that I wanted to do, right? If I was trying to learn how to kickflip for 5 years and I was like, I can't do this, that's not going to be fun. But if you put the time and effort in and you get better and you evolve, that was always the fun for me. So I don't have enough team experience to know, like, would I have stuck with hockey, for instance, if we were constantly losing? I don't know. But if I want to think if I was myself getting better as a goalie or as an offensive hockey player or as a batter in baseball, or if I was a quarterback and learning how to throw further, then that evolution would be what propelled me, my own evolution. Because you kind of know, right? Like, you're going to jump from team to team as you grow up. You're going to be in different leagues. You're going to be at different levels. You're going to go from freshman to JV to varsity. So I don't know how much. I think I would probably be more inclined to think that way. Like, what can I bring to each team as I grow and as I get older and as I go into this league and as I go on, maybe I'm good enough to make a travel league, that type of thing. You know, the thing I think about with you is when you're really good at something, like you were really good at hockey and you play deep into your, you know, high school career, let's say, that must be a weird thing to get hip to the notion or hip yourself to the notion of, okay, what do I do from here? Can I go to the college level? And then from there, can I go to minors? Do I have a chance at the majors? Can I be involved in this somehow off the ice? What was that like? Because I was never good at enough at anything to even get to that point of the conversation.
Oh, yeah. I was disabused of any notion that I would play in a good college program in high school just because the caliber of my team wasn't high enough. So I had bad stats. I was atrophying probably in quality. I was making a lot of saves, but who wants a goalie on a team like that, you know? But I do think that I was on a trajectory in my middle school years, especially to play at a Hockey East level school, which I went to a hockey school, but I didn't play for the team. And that's a team that produces NHL players. I don't know that you kind of, I guess what I'm saying is, like, on one hand, I'd have to be kind of delusional to think that I would ever have played at that level. On the other hand is, like, I'm not really quite sure, because I think I was on a trajectory. I definitely played with contemporaries that ended up making it. You know, people that I played around did make it. And Mom and I were just talking about one of the goalies I played with, Steven, who was a good friend of mine, who played at a high level in hockey or college. And then I think he went and played in the minors for a while and stuff. So who knows what would have happened. But I think that during that time in high school, I had no illusion that I was, because I was going to see Mom at Northeastern because she worked there. And I would go to hockey games, and it's like you could see the level that these guys were playing at. It's like, it's comical to think that I would ever be on this team. But there was a time
you realized that at some point.
Yeah, but there was a time when I thought for sure that that's what I wanted to do and I would have done. And maybe if I stayed and playing at that level the whole time, stayed on like travel teams instead of playing for a high school team, you know, if I stayed in New England, it would have went differently. But I picture you, Dakes, you turn in those 4-6-3 double plays.
You know what? I should say this too, Kyle. I'm not one of those skateboarders, those aging skateboarders who's like, fuck sports, because the truth of the matter is, especially with baseball, and I still feel this way about baseball specifically, is that ultimately I loved baseball a lot more than baseball loved me. Mm-hmm. And I realized that even as a pretty young kid in like fifth or sixth grade, that I probably would have went on to want to play that game because I really did enjoy it. But I knew that at a certain point, I guess, it was a waste of time. And I, you know, by proxy, I found skateboarding, and maybe part of that was my decision to invest in something new and dedicate my time to something that not only I enjoyed, but that I could actually get, you know, it's very rewarding when you find something that you actually click with physically, right? So that was a big part of it with me, was that I guess there was a little heartbreak there, especially because I had a friend, my best friend, John, growing up, who was quite good at baseball. He was very good. The only reason he didn't really go on and play beyond high school, I think, is because he just lost interest. He had a killer arm and could hit the ball. He was strong. He was a strong kid. So that was part of it for me, was that I just found something that, you know, it didn't love me back.
Yeah.
That, it's kind of sad.
I hear that. That makes a lot of sense. And I think I think maybe a lot of people, more than you would think, kind of come to that realization at some point that things aren't quite what you have to kind of dissuade yourself of those childhood thoughts of, I'm going to be an astronaut. I'm going to be, it's like, no, you're not.
It's not happening.
No, you're not. Yeah. That's just like living in reality though. I think it would have been insane for me to have gone and tried out at Northeastern. First of all, walking on the team, which you don't do. You're invited onto the team, but they have tryouts because they have to, and they might take like one person, and it's not happening for me.
Would have been a great story to tell though.
It would have been very like Rudy almost, you know.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Do you really want it like that? Rudy's awesome. I love that story. It's a really wonderful and heartfelt and powerful story, but do you want it like that, where you're basically like, you know, and I'm not trying to be mean, but it's like, you know, like the retarded kid or whatever, who like everyone's like, let him shoot a basket. It's like, that's cool for him because that's the best of his potential. He's not working on the same level. He doesn't have the same potential. You let him have that moment and everyone feels good. But it's likely that he might not even know any better as to know that that's like a celebratory moment. But if you're just on the up and up, in some way. It's like, do you want it like that? And that to me, I've always thought about as well. It's like, yeah. I want it the right way or not at all.
That's fair point.
Yeah.
There's a lot of integrity in that. I get that. Sure.
I'm sure there's a different word than retarded I could have used, but I couldn't think of it at the time.
My kids would not like that you just said. They're very defensive about this.
Yeah, why? Why?
Oh, it didn't age right.
I don't understand why that word, though. It's like that. I get like not using the word gay and all these other things, but like, come on, guys. Let's take it easy here. You know, we can't say something stupid through that word now. All right, fine. Whatever. You guys win. You always do.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
All right. I want to talk about a couple other things here that I thought were interesting. First of all, what do we think of Hans? The character of Hans, the old wise man who for some reason has a newspaper clipping of a second place performance on his wall for all of these years, 20 years. He's like, it's important to remember the past. Like, all right.
I have two words for you, Kyle.
Huh?
I have two words for you.
Yeah.
Diplomatic immunity.
Yes. Of course.
I was shocked to see him in here. I was like, this guy is playing.
Ross Ackland. Yeah.
Right. Is that lethal? That's Lethal Weapon 2.
Yes.
Where he plays the big bad.
Yes.
It's Arjun Rudd or whatever. Gangster.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He has the South African posse of badasses. I was so amazed to see him as a good guy at a film. I immediately went to my beloved Lethal Weapon 2. But he was good in this, but he played some sort of mentor slash father figure slash Santa Claus type guy. But I could not stop thinking about, because his role is such a cartoon in Lethal Weapon. Mm-hmm. I just went. But it's nice to see a character like this take a character actor like this take a turn. He could do both things. He works.
Yeah. When we did Lethal Weapon 2, we thought that was a very turn of the 90s movie too, because it was all about apartheid.
Yes.
At a time when that was kind of, I mean, it's still relevant, I guess, to this day in some ways, but it was kind of coming to a head at that point.
So yeah. Seriously.
It felt very timely. Yeah. He's interesting. I love the old mentor. He knows how he just comes in the back door and he knows it's Gordon. It's like, how the fuck did you know? And then you had the skates ready to go. Almost nailed. I didn't like this, because everyone who plays hockey knows you wear your skates as tight and as small as you possibly can. So he had the nerve to give Gordon a pair of skates a half a size too big and then tell him to wear big socks. No one would ever do that. You would.
Oh, that's not a thing.
No, definitely not. You want your skates as tight as possible. Sometimes I see these kids around the neighborhood on their rollerblades and they're skating and their ankles are like this. I'm like, dude, you can't skate like that. Like, you either need to tighten that thing up or get off those skates.
I can't believe how hard it is to skate. I think I told you this briefly. Lilia and her friends got really into ice skating, and that was the thing they did all year round-ish, because skating and hockey is pretty big around here, which I think is kind of weird for Philly, but it's just a thing. And that's what they did. Instead of going to the movies or going bowling, they went ice skating, and Lilia got good at it, and she enjoyed it. And she had an ice skating party, or one of her friends did, and it must have been hers. And I had to get on the ice. This was about 5 years ago. Never ice skated in my life. Never did any winter sports. Never got on a snowboard, really.
Toboggan.
Never skied. Never. Skeleton. Not even that.
Yeah.
And I could not believe how horrified. Because I went in very intrepid. Like, how hard can this be? That was my attitude. And, dude, I was horrified. I got the skates on and was having trouble walking from the carpeted bench area to the ice. Like, at that point, I was in my mid-40s. Ish, but I was properly frightened, and it took me the whole day to be able to, really the better part of the day, to help me just let go of the wall. I was really struck by how difficult ice skating is. If you guys have never tried it, don't judge. Do not judge.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's tough.
Yeah, ice skating is tough, and it's muscle memory, which is good. When I get back on the ice or when I rollerblade and stuff, it's fine, because you just kind of know how to do it. But the thing, that's how I know your skates were probably too loose, because the one I always tell people you want tighten them as much as possible. In fact, when you play hockey, I'm sure this is still a thing, but when I was a kid, you used to sometimes people even had these like metal hooks where you would use them to pull as tight as you can on the laces. And the laces were always like
that.
Yeah, where you would pull as tight, like tighter than your hand could possibly withstand. Because if you make them as tight as possible, your ankle can't bend.
Right.
And so
it's rigid.
Yeah. So like you're not going to go like this. You're either going to stand up or you're going to fall completely. And that's why you have to be on your edges and all that. But that will, that's the secret to good skating is tight, small skates. I wear a size 10 shoe and my skates, I think, are 8.5s or 9s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did that ever give your feet problems?
Yeah. Like I used to, you smash your foot into these skates, smash them into the skate.
You know? It's like a geisha.
When I went and got rollerblades in LA, I went to this like really nice famous hockey shop there, and they have this machine even that like sizes your foot the way a hockey boot should be sized, like not the way a shoe is sized, which they give you a little room. So like it's just on top of you. So it should be somewhat difficult to get on and get off. Like you have to have effort to get them on and off. But yeah, it's a thing. But if you do that, if you make that sacrifice, and I'm sure a lot of people that go to free skate and all these things don't do that, and they tie them like they're tying shoes and all that. It's like, well, you're never going to learn how to skate. You're never going to skate on a boot that's not like this with the blade. You're not going to skate on a blade like this. So you need to just be like this.
See that? But that's one of those little authentic touches, would be authentic touches that didn't make the movie, that a skater or a hockey player like you, that's automatically a red flag. It's like, get those little details, have somebody advising on the movie to make it a little more, just a little more genuine.
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter. But I think Gordon, if he was real, would have been like, all right, I guess. Like, I don't think he would have eagerly taken, although I do love that scene because the sound is so good in that scene where the boots are hitting against each other and like the blades. And it's like, that's the way hockey sounds. And when he gets on, I love the sound of hockey. And when he gets on first of all, I wish I lived in a place where you could just go on a bench in your town and just go on. It's like, this is fucking awesome. You know, where they're Duluth or wherever they are. So I love the sound of him skating around and just the puck hitting the boards and games and the puck hitting the post. And there's just the sounds of hockey really well done in this. And right on down to that scene, that quiet scene in the shop that late night where the boots hit together. I'm like, that's the way it sounds like that.
Wow. That's cool that you know that.
Yeah, it's powerful. It was I love hockey. And the one thing I can relate to about him is that I loved hockey like he did. And it's so interesting that your life can change so much and time can pass that you don't even remember that era, really. Like it feels like another time in life where things don't really matter. But I did want to say, I thought it was interesting. They have a team. I guess this is more reasonable than I thought when I wrote it down, but he said he needed $15,000 to outfit his entire Pee Wee hockey team. That getting off kind of cheap. Maybe not at that time, but that seemed a little weird. But they went and just, Hans was killing it. They're basically laundering that money. They got all their new stuff. What did you think about? Well, let me ask you this. The Oreo line. Let's go here. I wrote this down. What do you think about calling it that? I don't know. Is it racist?
I had to rewind it the first time. I was like, did they just say that? Because the movie really wasn't going into that type of territory at all. It wasn't really getting that controversial.
It was quite progressive in some sense because it represented, you know, had girls, had, you know, especially Connie is like a main character in all the movies. And
yeah,
so they do pay attention. And even that scene where they're like, you know, people, when he's like, hey, guys, I want to talk to you guys in the blonde, yes, figure skaters, like people.
I thought that was very contemporary.
So then, yeah. So movie. Then, but then you have this other thing where they're calling the two black guys playing it with a white center, the Oreo line. So I just didn't know what to make of that.
You know, it's interesting because I was, again, you're thinking back to when this formula started with things like Bad News Bears, and they have all the tropes, right? They have the overweight kid. They have the spazzy kid. They have the wise ass. They have the kid with ungovernable rage.
They have the New York Jew.
They have the New York Jew.
That's like, really why is he there in Minneapolis? Okay, fine.
They have the really sweet, lovable kid. But you know what? They do things a little different. Like they have two black kids. They have two girls on the team. Like there's something a little bit innovative with they put a new bent on it. They skew it a little bit different than the other stuff, which I thought Well, I noticed it. Let's put it that way.
And they do a great job in the second one. I think in hindsight, I didn't look at it this way because I just thought it was like, OK, that's representative of the world when I'm a kid. But especially in the sequel, you'll see they get like some new recruits who end up becoming like core Mighty Ducks. And one's Hispanic, one's Asian, another one's a girl, like, and so on and so forth. So they do, they are trying to mix up. One's black,
which I love.
Yeah. Is it Kel? No, Keenan. Keenan Thompson is.
Oh, he's in there?
Yeah, is one of the new recruits in the second one.
Oh, starting with the second one. That's kind of cool. It's nice to have a little mix of the old with the new.
Yeah, like they basically what ends up happening, Dig, is they, and it's a joke, actually. So Tamborelli is he plays, you know, Little Pete. He plays the redhead kid.
Love that kid.
He came to IGN to promote Grand Theft Auto 3, and we did a video, and we were talking, and we were talking, I think, about how Mighty Ducks, like, some of them were just removed for no reason in the sequel. Like, they're like, we're going to take these guys and bring them forward, and then, like, we're going to lose these five or so.
Oh.
And that's what ended up happening. So, like, the black kids are out, like, the brothers.
That sucks.
I think they're both out.
Love those dudes.
Yeah, the little kid with, like, the leather jacket.
Oh, he's out.
But then they add in, like, a bunch of new guys who end up, and then they don't really add anyone else in the third one. It's just them. So, but they do, like, get very, like, they have, like, a southern guy and, like, okay, a guy from Miami who's, like, Hispanic. And yeah, so it's
as a character designer, like, yeah, I like mixing it up because it's interesting. But, cool, you know, they're doing it also to cast the widest net. They want to appeal to everybody. They want a kid to see themselves in somebody there.
But it's so weird. Kid. As a kid, I didn't think anything of it. I mean, I'm sure I was a white kid, but I was like, oh, this is great. Yeah.
For me, it was always natural. Like, I know kids, you want kids to relate, but for me, it was always the kid I wanted to be. Like, oh, I wish I was the tough ass, you know, the tough kid with the leather jacket, or, you know, I wish I could be that mouthy or come up with a joke like that or whatever, you know. I loved Goldberg because he's from Philly. He's got the Philly gear. Not only the Flyers, at some point he has a Pats cheesesteak shirt.
Yeah, and
right?
They keep that going in all of them, like, that he's like a Philly guy or whatever.
Love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And it's kind of it's for no reason. It's just one of those little things that's just like a main line that they just play it through, like one of those little character notes that doesn't mean anything, but it's fun.
In the second film, you'll find it funny. There's like you meet his family a little bit, and like just very briefly, and they have a picture, and it just says, and it's like a picture of him, and it says, "Our son, the goalie," or whatever. I mean, I just always thought that was hysterical, like in their restaurant or whatever. Speaking of all this, I mean, who are some of the players that stuck out to you? So, I mean, I'll go through here. You have Charlie, who is the main character in all three movies, and played by Joshua Jackson, who obviously goes on to become famous later on from Dawson's Creek. And then he did that show. What is that show that takes place in Montauk that was on HBO? I'm looking it up now. The Affair. Yes.
I don't know it.
Oh, it was on Showtime. Yeah, I watched that. And he was in that, too. And yeah, it took place on Long Island. That was
writing this down. I never heard of this.
And he was really good in that, too. But, you know, so you have him, you have, let's see, Jesse, you have Goldberg, Averman, Peter Mark, who's the little kid, Carp, Jermaine, Moreau. So Guy and Connie end up in all of them. Like I said,
that's cool.
Juicy Smollett, like I said, plays Terry Hall, which is hysterical. Adam Banks, obviously a main character. So yeah, who, any of these kids stick out to you? They do a pretty nice job. It's a brisk movie, and they do I wish that they stuck around for like another 20 minutes to just kind of flesh a few things out. I think the story moves a little too quick, and I'll get into that, but
it does.
They do a nice job of kind of giving us some different characters to work with here. And I find them quite lovable, this cast of goons.
Yeah. You know what? There are a lot of characters to take stock of in a short amount of time, but they do okay with it. They get to touch on everybody a little bit. You know what's funny, man? Has this ever happened to you? The Charlie character, Joshua Jackson, that Joshua Jackson is a proper celebrity. I mean, I think of Dawson's Creek. He was a household name and a face everybody would recognize. Very distinctive. I never knew that actor's name. I never knew that guy was called Joshua Jackson. I think of somebody else in Dawson's Creek, like James Vanderbeek, right? You know James Vanderbeek. You know who he is. You know the characters he played. That's one of the weird things. I never knew that guy's real name. Has that ever happened to you before?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I don't know anyone's name.
I was like, what? That's his name?
I see actors sometimes, especially character actors, where Like, I've seen you in 20 things. I have no idea who you are. Though. Like, you just know. It's like, oh, this guy's, it's time for this guy to show up here. I'm horrible with celebrity names. I'm horrible with names generally.
Actually. Yeah, Helene's like that, too. She's not good with names. Usually that doesn't happen to me, though. And I'm like, wow, that is weird that I never knew. Because that guy's in, like, Ocean's 11 in the beginning, I think, of the first movie. And I was like, wow, how did I never know that guy's name? Because I'd know his face in two notes. So that's a strange thing. But I love the cast. And you know that they also have the Fulton character who's like the street tough kid who's not really, you know, he's not even a hockey player. They kind of just recruit him. And that's reminds me of Bad News Bears, which is interesting. And then, of course, you know what? This is the whole thing that really impressed me. This is when I knew the movie had me. They have the whole thing going on with the team. The coach who's going through his own character arc, right? And he's trying to help these young kids and it plays into his backstory. And then they have the story of the really sweet kid on the team. And now the coach and him are bonding. And you know, this kid's fatherless. So the coach is kind of slowly becoming the surrogate dad. And there's a romance kindling with the kid's mom and everything like that. And then on top of that, I thought this was really impressive. On top of that, they put the whole story in with the rich kid, with the rival kid on the Hawks, who now has to play on the team with them. And they're like the hated rival. And I thought that was a whole added dimension that wasn't probably even necessary. And the fact that they juggle all those things, and now you got the Draco Malfoy character coming to play for the Gryffindors. You know, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I've never seen a kid movie try to do that much. Like, they go one step further than they really had to. And so now you have a whole nother side story happening and a whole nother thing to pay attention to with the dad and the kid you kind of feel bad for because he's a quote unquote bad guy, right? He's a rival. He's the enemy, but all this kid really wants to do is play hockey. So he's not really a bad guy. And then you kind of feel bad for him because he's really not accepted at first. He's seen as an outsider. I thought that was really neat. Like, this movie did more, again, like, than it had to do. They could have kept it simple for kids. Mm. And they give you a little more meat. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And I think this movie holds up incredibly well. I don't know. It's part of its nostalgia because that time period, especially for us. But yeah, I was really impressed by having that sort of arc with the rich kid coming to play for the underdog team.
Yeah, I like that too. And it, I guess the point of it is to, I guess, show the conniving kind of a manipulation that Gordon is willing to go into. Cause he gets into the minutiae. I know he's like, it's very lawyerly. First, he tries to get them to cheat, which obviously turns them all off. But then he tries to find this technicality where, you know, Riley ends up losing his shit on him and all of that, but they end up getting Banks. And it's funny when they get Banks, then they walk out of the locker room on him, but then he scores the first goal in the championship game and they all hug him and love him. This is what I'm talking about the movie moving a little too quickly. Is why are things happening where you're not explaining or you're not like getting to the bottom of it quicker? So for instance, the overhearing the conversation when like the team doesn't show up for him and they have to forfeit that game, which, you know, they almost blow their playoff position for this or whatever. Why didn't he just go like, what is your pro? What are you guys talking about? And then just explain to him. I was talking, you know, sarcastically, which he does later, but just explain. This is the frustration I have with movies sometimes and TV shows and just storytelling generally is this drama is totally unnecessary simply because someone is refusing to acknowledge the reality of the situation. Like, why would you let that fester and pretend that nothing happened and just let them all walk away? And they think they're right and all that. Why? So I just wish that they spent a little bit more time letting these things breathe a little bit, because it doesn't even make a lot of sense when they become good. They only show them practicing a little bit. When they show them playing as Division Five in the beginning, they're horrible. I mean, they need to do more than just that to win hockey games. I know it's supposed to be a movie, but you could have given us a little bit more of like a buildup. Seems like things kind of happen in acts, which they do literally, but that we don't really get much segue between them. They're horrible, then they're competent, then they're good, then they're great, but we don't really know why, other than they're bonding at the Minnesota North Stars game, they have new players, they're bonding at school and all the rest. I don't know, that to me was a little bit of a mystery, not so much then as it is now. I don't think it bothered me at all back in the day.
No, you're absolutely right about that. I hate to keep taking it back to the Bad News Bears, but that movie, that first Bad News Bears, does exactly that. There's two really good players on the team and the rest of them pretty much suck generally. And part of the arc is that those two players carry the team on their shoulders to the detriment of making everybody else feel useless. And the team loses morale because of that. And then they have to come back from the team of like Kelly and the girl pitcher. I forget her name. They have to basically concede to be members of the team, not do everything themselves. Like Kelly can't run around, play all the outfield positions, right? He's got to let Tanner make some mistakes or whatever. That was exactly what that movie did. And that this could have taken a page out of that, where maybe the everybody was trying to, and that plays into the Gordon Ramsay thing too, where everybody's trying to be an individual. It was all based on baby Gordon's, you know, his penalty shot. It was all him. And he's that whole duck mentality of like the duck by itself is harmless, but the flock, the threatening flock of ducks.
It's awesome. Love
I'm
it.
Here to argue that 20 ducks is just as toothless as a single duck.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, they're not
just run through kicking.
Like that. Yeah, yeah, you just fucking.
They can't do anything.
Do like a Zangief twisting punch move.
But I get the idea.
Yeah, totally.
I get the idea.
Totally.
But you know, they could have done something like that. But yeah, it is. They have to get through a lot. And you're right, though. It doesn't reach like a denouement. Like it doesn't reach that pinnacle of drama for them. Everything is basically played out in that last game, which I think is fun, and maybe they are juggling too much with the character arcs, but yeah, I know what you mean. Like there's no proper buildup. They're just suddenly kind of seemingly in contention.
It's just film, I guess, you know.
Yeah,
I just,
one of those things.
It's just not, it wouldn't have been harder to show us more. I'm wondering why they felt like they needed to be so quick. 140 minutes or so, 145 minutes, or I'm sorry, not 145 minutes, an hour 45, 145 minutes would have been maybe a more appropriate time to show us. Although maybe that would have been a little long. I'm wondering, Dig, if you have anything else that you wanted to say, because I've kind of touched on most of my points. I think there are some funny lines that are in here, like the scene where they're trying to convince Gordon to give Banks back or whatever, and he says, "You guys cut a deal with the Pee Wee Hockey League," which is a hysterical line, and Gordon stop quacking. It happens during that as well. But other than that, I mean, I don't know that I have so much else to say, except for I want to say this. I do want to get, and again, I was probably bothering Micah so much during this because I was talking to her so much, but they make them, and I've always wanted to get a Hawks jersey and a Ducks jersey. I think they would both be cool things to have. I love the Hawks logo and like just the ominous nature. Actually, the bad guys in the second one, Iceland, have an even cooler logo, which is like a Viking helmet, like a Viking head. It's
dope. Yeah, look at
it's
that.
Super dope. And it says Iceland, but it says Island. Like, I guess that's what Iceland is in.
Oh, interesting.
In Icelandic. Okay. So it's really, really neat. And that we have to do that at some point, just because I want you to meet the bad guy coach in that, because he's fucking awesome.
I want to watch these.
Wolf the Dentist Stanza is his name. And they have they're just an amazing rivalry in that movie. But yeah, it's a really, that movie came out in 94. And I actually have funny memories of that, because I remember watching that on VHS, that fat Disney VHS at grandma's house for some reason, probably around the time grandpa was sick. Cause that probably would have been 94, 95, something like that.
Right. That would have been right there, right on time. Yeah.
So I have vague memories of that as well. But as for this first movie, it's a very memorable film. I mean, it came out when I was in third grade. Mom had left dad a few months before. So that was the year when dad and I were alone. And I remember seeing it with him. And yeah, and then having the poster. And yeah, I just always took this movie with me. I love hockey. And I don't think a hockey movie comes along every once in a while. What was that movie? Mystery Alaska. Wasn't that a hockey, random hockey movie?
I don't know that one.
And obviously Miracle, which is an awesome movie about the 1980 Olympics. And there are a few, but not very many. And
not a lot.
I would say other than this might actually be the most iconic hockey movie all told. I think that maybe the funniest and most inappropriate would certainly be Slapshot.
But that movie is special. That's the Paul Newman.
Yeah, Paul Newman
movie. OK, I wanted to tell you that movie is free on Amazon right now.
Oh, awesome.
It popped up out of nowhere because it's a little known movie.
Yeah, that movie is. There are some lines in that movie where I'm like, oh, my God, that is, first of all, it's the most inappropriate thing I've ever heard anyone say. Some of them, I don't know. Have you watched it recently? There's a couple years ago. There's a scene at a fashion when they're doing a fashion show, like a local fashion show.
Yeah,
and some of the things they say in that scene, like, you would not get away with saying today at all. Like, throwing the F word around and, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's like, you know,
that was not a fuck, special the era. Other F word. Those, the twins in that movie, mm-hmm. I don't forget their actual names.
Yeah, but the Hansons.
The Hanson twins. Iconic.
Yeah, with their glasses. They're just goons. It's fucking hysterical, dude. They're total goons. That movie is really, really fun. That movie is really, really funny. The hockey's better in that movie, too, actually, than it is in this.
Is it?
But it's like low key, you know, minor league schlock. I mean, it's supposed to be. But that movie is fun.
Right.
That movie is more like Caddyshack to me. This movie is obviously much more of a children's fare, although with the Oreo line and the drunk driving, perhaps a little bit PG-13 in some ways, and maybe even a little bit racist. But yeah, I'm curious if you have anything else that you wanted to say that we didn't touch on.
You know, there's something you might be able to shed light on here. There was like a plot hole for me, unless I missed something, because again, I only saw it twice and you grew up with this movie. There's something in the beginning of the movie, and it's to set up the whole thing of Gordon being a winner and the fact that he can't tolerate losing, right? He's got this winning record, like he's never lost a case. But his secretary keeps reminding him that, no, you've lost one. He's like 36-0, and she's like, no, you're 36-1. But do they ever go into what that one thing is? Because I thought that they were going to play that into the plot somehow, and I think they just drop it.
I think there is some sort of quib. I think that's where he says something like, we don't count that one because I slept with the court reporter or something. I think that's all
so
related.
It's just that he's
I think that's, yeah, he like just doesn't count it for a technicality or whatever. Yeah.
So he's a winner, but he's got all these characters.
Then he goes into Duckworth's office, and he was basically saying, like, you don't need the spike. Like, you can just win. Which is
right.
So interesting. And I, as a kid, I just didn't understand the connection between his legal philosophy and his hockey past, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't smart enough to make that connection.
Yeah. There's another thing that they do with this movie, too, where they're sort of setting up Duckworth to be like the father figure. Right. And then he becomes the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And they kind of pull the rug out. And I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I kind of liked that.
I do, too, because it shows that he was a sellout. Like, he didn't mean anything he said to Gordon. And Gordon could finally be free of, like, this dude's grasp because it didn't matter. He was a total fake anyway. I think, again, that was that was lost on me when I was a kid. I had no depth of knowledge as to why that mattered. But I think that's like what it's all about, is it kind of frees him and unencumbers him to not have to worry about this anymore. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I love that. It's so important to go back and watch movies from your childhood because you get so much more out of them. Sometimes it's rewarding, and sometimes it's like The Dark Crystal, where it's like, what the fuck? How did I like this movie? You know? But it's always always rewarding in some regard, because you always do get more. You miss so much as a kid. I miss stuff. I mean, I probably should go back and revisit things from my mid-teens because I didn't get them. You know, that type of thing where you're watching rated R movies now, but you can't get some of this stuff.
Right.
You just don't have enough wisdom. You haven't accrued enough experience. So, yeah, it's interesting. I like that, where you have that seeming mentor in the beginning and then he's not as virtuous. And then you got the real guy in Hans, especially with his connections back to South Africa, diamond embezzling. Or
whatever he was doing down there. Yeah. I also, I don't know if I'm wrong about this, but I don't think we ever see Coach Bombay at home. We have no idea where he lives.
You're absolutely right.
Or like what he,
I don't think we
like
ever see
how he rolls. Like out, you see him alone sometimes, but you never see him in his home environment.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Only in Charlie's house where he's having dinner, right?
Exactly.
Huh. That is interesting. Yeah, you wonder if they even went there and this just ended up on the cutting room floor. They just felt like it wasn't important because I missed it.
Yeah, I wonder if there are any deleted scenes. Let's see.
That is interesting.
The Mighty Ducks deleted scenes. I guess there might be, but not anything too crazy. It doesn't look like. Yeah, nothing that shows any of this stuff. Oh, and this is from Mighty Ducks 2, I think. Yeah, so I'm not seeing anything.
And that Mighty Ducks animated series is interesting too. I never really knew about it, and then we had listeners back when I was doing more commissioned artwork, and they were huge fans of the series. I guess it makes sense because they were a lot younger, and they had me do a commission, and that's the first time I really ever saw those character designs and stuff. And I was like, wow, the Mighty Ducks really did cross over into a franchise. outside of the films. Then they had the animated series. Then they had the live action series for a couple of seasons. And the gear, you know, the jersey. I think that was a big thing in the Disney store back when the Disney store was a thing. So it is. It's interesting. It's been around for a while. Had a lot of staying power.
Yeah, that first Duck, like, again, they changed the Ducks logo into the original Mighty Ducks logo from Anaheim in the film. But they, I love that first logo, just that fucking goofy duck with the hockey stick. It's like it's an awesome old school logo you'd see in like some sort of random farm team somewhere.
It's nostalgic.
And so I thought that was interesting that we never really get to know Gordon too well on a personal level, apart from these individual scenes at the law firm or in his car or in the limo or something. Just would have liked to see him at home a little bit more.
Definitely.
See what he does. How does he unwind? Is there a scene where he has to resist the booze? They don't ever really play with that. He doesn't he's never tempted. He kind of just like, all right, I guess I'm not going to do this anymore.
I had this picture, like when they have this whole thing up on reels and it's on the movie and they're playing it back. They're like, wow, this guy's like a rampant alcoholic and maybe we should cut back on that a little bit. Maybe we should just, you know, let's do the drinking and driving as a one-off.
Right.
You know, but I don't know though. And I think Emilio Estevez would be unlikable, but if you go back and watch Bears and Walter Matthau, like, and he's just drinking and cursing at the kids and stuff like that, he's still lovable but I think Walter Matthau is already kind of crossing over into old man territory where there's a little bit of, I don't know. Emilio Estevez is just too young and handsome and stuff like that. It wouldn't work the same way. You know, there would be something more American Psycho about it.
Yeah, totally. I'm fascinated just by, again, not really being aware of the timing as a kid, because I never saw The Breakfast Club until I was a teenager.
Mm.
He's not that far away from his Brat Pack stuff from here. It's very close in proximity. And I never really, you know that intuitively, I guess, but I never really made that connection.
Yeah, he's not far off.
Yeah.
From Breakfast, St. Elmo's Fire, and The Outsiders before that. Those are the big three. That's what I always think of him in, but now I have a fourth movie. Because I thought he was good in this. Thought he really did a good job.
Yeah, me too.
Very likable.
Yeah, I like the character. I like the actor too. Yeah, totally. And he doesn't do very much.
No.
He hasn't done very much, and he's the Mission Impossible stuff and Odds and Ends, but yeah, that's it. This might be one like his maybe best known role widely as Coach Bombay.
Yeah.
Who the hell knows?
Yeah.
All right, Dig. Anything else to say? Or is that all for the Mighty Ducks?
No, that's it. I had fun.
I rented it on Amazon. It is on Disney Plus. I'm sure that's where you got it.
Yeah, I watched it on Disney Plus. I was bummed to see that they dropped the series because I wanted to see what that was all about. And I know he came back in the first season. I think he had beef and didn't come back for the second season before they just finally chopped it. But guys, watch this movie. It's better than you think. I will say it's better than you think. It's a brisk watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's an hour and 45 minutes of your life. Steal a couple hours away from Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, whatever it is you're doing out there now. Final Fantasy 16 for me. So
yes, that's right.
Oh, it's so good. So many shades of four. It's amazing.
You keep saying that. That's going to be what gets me to play this game. How can I resist when you say this?
Oh yeah, you'll see. I mean, you'll see. I think it's obvious. I don't think it's obvious to many people because I don't think there's a ton of people. A lot of people are complaining about how the game is different and it's not Final Fantasy. And it's like Final Fantasy's always been different.
They just don't go back far enough.
Right. It's not Dragon Quest.
Right. You
know? And I love Dragon Quest and that has a place. So anyway, I'll leave that for Sacred Symbols though. Dig, let's end this episode of Knockback as we always do with a dad joke.
Okay. I got a good one. This is a slightly confusing one, but I like it. Kyle.
Yeah.
What did the shoe say to the confused hat?
I don't know.
You go on ahead. Why do you have to be a shoe?
I don't know.
I like that it's a shoe.
Yeah, it could just be any item of clothing, I guess. Yeah, that's interesting.
I like that it's a shoe.
Yeah, that's fine.
Not bad. Not
it's illustrative. All right, Dave. Appreciate your time. Hope all is well with you, my friend.
Yeah, you too, my friend. It was fun. This was a good one.
It was. And thank you all out there for your love, kindness, and support of all things Last Stand, Knockback, etc. You know the drill. Patreon.com/LastStandMedia for early ad-free access. Merch at laststandmedia.store. We'll see you next time for more. Until then, goodbye.
Knockback, a retro and nostalgia podcast, is a product and trademark of Last Stand Media and Collins Last Stand, LLC, and is recorded from Central Virginia and the Philadelphia suburbs, USA.
The show was conceived by and is produced by me, Colin Moriarty. My co-host is Dagan Moriarty. Knockback's executive producer is Dustin Furman, and the show is edited by associate producer Ben Smith. All of Last Stand's theme music is by Ramon Narvaez. As you know, all of Last Stand Media's shows, including Knockback, are fan-funded on Patreon at patreon.com/laststandmedia. The following names are at the producer support level or higher on Patreon, and we're grateful for your kindness and generosity. William Holbert, Stephen Nieder, Ross Marenka, Miguel A. Brewer, Morgan Ashley, Azan, Michael Vecchio, SLVFMA, Daniel Diamore, Brad Cooley, Jeremy Key, Patrick Leslie, Malachi Wall, Dave Cowell, Donald John Vader, Stephen Innerfield, Jordan Vallett, Edward Fryrier, Ross R. Lowe, The Ohio Bigfoot, Landon Pipkin, Joshua Jones, Kevin Hawley, Hugo Della Ghia, Austin Michael Lipka, Paul Warren, Harold Eustache, Will Williams, Dino's Roar, Nicholas Renaud, Shane Brecky, Jack Sin, Sean Llewellyn, Michael Mash Potato, Gene Lay Reedy, Bloody Magic, Nate Izod, Hargeet Chani, Ellis, Albion, Josh Sullinger, Gunner 117, Andrew Roman, Jacob Donovan, My Name is Mayo, Logan Byford, Eddie Medina, Jason R. Zahn, Sean Hatfield, Christopher Knock, Ryan Daly, Sean Gulati, Donato Chiarlo, Grayson Maxwell, Cody Woodall, Sorta Serious Gaming, Colin Farley, Mark Arnold, Whiskey Sin, Zier Parix, Sean Miles, Relentless Rex, Alan Tuniak, Dustin Klingman, Christian R., Jad Rita, Patrick Skipper, Jeremy Roberts, Luke Aldersley, Dustin Graff, Zach Cohen, Peyton Stone, Fozzie Bear, Michael Buffel, Dan Root, Asak Paredes, Dante Sharp, Talisman, Christopher Morgan, Randall Holsey, Dio or Die, T-Bone 007, Josh Godfrey, Kalike Souza, Vornak, Travis, Joe, Ross Chandler, H-Trons, Antonio C., Ryan, Jay Getter, Bjorn Campbell, Theo, Jeff Mercado, Gregory Slavinsky, Jordan Gale, Of Fortuna, John Zile, Boots, Tyler Brown, Megadeth, Poot, Gavin Newland, Alex Lapierre, Saul Balcazar, Birdo64, Raul Melendez, Eric Harden, Matt Flowers, Kinnums, Joseph Baker, Kendrick Callis, Jimmy Rodriguez, Caswell, TB Lightning, Dave Alvarez, Will Hernandez, Chris Galvin, Mason Kadalak, Ollie Fritz, Zach Allum, Kyle Hagel, Colin Love, Daryl E. Naiman, Ryan R. Kittredge, Toby Ryland, Stewie108, Patrick Montgomery, DB Cooper, Richter86, Barrett Boswell, Christopher DeVio, Chris Morton, Joel Holcomb, Johnny Waffles, Roto24, Jonathan Coates, Sean Mason, Josh Gravelick, Jordan Town, Brian Chand, Organic Produce, Carlos Algarit, Mike Menzel, Night Draft, James Hayes, Richard Hebert III, Miranda Grubba, Joosh, Tyler Lyle, Gavin, Morgs Rooks, Jerome Ferreira, Joey Andrzejczyk, Nathan R., Joe McPartland, Gary Cavallo, Christopher Moore, Jacob Bell, Dennis Usel, Lewin Ray Loper, Jonathan Cortez, Michael Hunt, Betty Ann Moriarty, John Scholes, Tom Quinn, Anton K., Alan Trembley, Tyler Bello, Ryan T. Mandel, Pork and Beans, Jean Francois Forze, Tony Zuniga, Robbie Hensley, Shane Miller, Alex Cabrera, Corey Dustin, Hugo's Desk, Peter Reynolds, Anthony Vasquez, Adam Kinniston, William O'Carroll, JSC 0828, Jorge Powell, Max Cannon, Thomas Sablin, Phil Crone, Throw 7, Adam Nix, Josh McKinney, Michael Gates, Alex Gates, Sean Chandler, Lockmort, Gio Corsi, Joey Gonoliger, Zach Jennings, Alex Mones, Gerald Pennington, Justin Payne, Justin Wagaman, Austin Riley, Paul Joyce, Alan Hopkins, Chad Lewis, Enrique Perez, Joshua Smallwood, Logan Willis, Sean Rayum, Spencer Brand, Don Lee, John Cordero, Greg Julius, Ashley Carlson, Marius Garson Peterson, Tyler Harris, Madmock Media, Ryan Davis, Bo Burkholz, and Jonathan Rice.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.